Hey, it's Pablo here, and this is indeed ESPN Daily. It is our fourth and final installment of our mini-series on Pardon the Interruption. And our first three episodes on PTI are in this same feed. You can go and find them. But we give this one to you today specifically, Friday, October 22nd, 2021. Because today is the 20-year anniversary of the day this sports television show went out and infected all of sports and also television. And by now, we've covered how every cable news show went out and stole PTI's topic rundown on the right side of the screen. Yeah, that is where all of that started. And we've covered how PTI's very visible countdown clock, a kind of anti-television device, foreshadowed the short attention spans of the internet. But even more than that, PTI inspired a whole genre. It became the model for the debate show. And 20 years later, here we are, drowning in debate. Televised conflict is pretty much everywhere, which is pretty dark, but also pretty ironic. Because the biggest reason for PTI's success isn't conflict or format or some device. It's something that can't be stolen. Chemistry.
Okay, so this is going to sound like I'm off topic. Because I'm going to start with a story about the grass courts at Wimbledon in England. And the first time that everybody goes to Wimbledon, they cannot believe how green the grass is. They've never seen anything this green in their lives. And they'll ask somebody, how'd you get the courts this green? And somebody who's British will say, well, you start with 5,000 years of rain. Okay, that's how it works. Chemistry doesn't just happen. You can't throw people together and say, get chemistry. You know, they could look a certain way, they could stand a certain way, they could talk a certain way. That doesn't mean that they can do this. Mike and I, before we did this show, we worked together for 20 years. That's how these things are developed. There's 40 years of friendship, 42 years now of friendship, and there's 20 years or 22 years of working together before we did this. Oh, that's a really long time.
But chemistry also goes even deeper than that, because friendship may be necessary for this approach to television, but it's not sufficient. What you need to understand is a phrase that matchmakers always like to use in boxing. Styles make fights. Just ask this guy.
James Andrew Miller. I'm an author, reporter, journalist, and podcaster.
Jim Miller worked for the Washington Post during Tony and Mike's time there, and he also wrote the book on ESPN, literally, called Those Guys Have All the Fun.
Will Bunn has, like, skin of a crocodile. He is so thick-skinned, it's almost like he jumps into a pool every day filled with Teflon and swims across it 10 times. Tony is the exact opposite. It's like razor thin. Things affect him. And you can tell. I mean, he's not Laurence Olivier. You can tell on his face. You can tell in his eyes. Things affect him.
And I can tell you this from personal experience, having filled in with Tony dozens upon dozens of times now. Everyone on staff knows which things affect Tony. And everyone strives to mitigate those things long before the show begins. Except for Mike.
Well, I'm not just on time for everything. I'm early for everything. And he's late for everything. And they've always said to me at PTI, why don't you stop being so early? Then you won't have to sit in that chair and wait so long. But I can't stop that, because that's who I am. I prepare on legal pads. That's who I am. That's what I've always done. Mike doesn't do anything like that. In the middle, right before we're going to do the show, Michael's like, give me a piece of paper. I got to write something down. That's it. He's going to write something down then. I've written down 15 pages of notes. He's going to write something down then. But when the bell rings, boy, oh boy, he's ready to go. He's ready to go. I'm ready to go, and he's ready to go. We just got there in a little different way.
Tony prepares in a painstaking way. I want to see the game. I want to see the game. I want to see the game. I want to see the West Coast game where Klay Thompson scores 37 and a quarter, and I want to be texting with, you know, two or three ex-players in live time. I'm fortunate. There's some goats that I'm able to communicate with or close to goats, and you're getting insight from them in real time as to what is going on in a game that they're just watching at home too, just like you, or maybe at a game. My brother always says he was my first host. My brother is 2 years younger than me. We argue and fight about stuff with much more volume and anger and heat than Tony and I do. Tony has seen these arguments. Tony has officiated the arguments with me and my brother. So I have this in multiple places in my life. Now I'm getting it with my son. It'll be a third place. Most of those are sports at this point. But Don and I get in more heated arguments than Don and I have arguments that have lasted years. Years. And we talk to each other like, we may talk to each other 7 times in a day. But we have arguments that have gone for decades.
Tony is 11 years older than Mike. It's important to remember that. And they nurtured their own particular dynamic. They would travel with each other for work. They would work alongside each other at the post. They would call each other all the time. To this day, they were pretty much always doing what you would now immediately recognize as their show.
When the show first came on, when PTI first came on, people didn't even look up. They just assumed we were back there yelling at each other. They didn't know we were not in the office at that point.
You could watch them. I watched them walking out together at night, and they're arguing. They're arguing to the elevator. They're arguing in the elevator. They're getting out of the elevator. They're still arguing. This show has been in their bloodstream and part of their life together since before PTI.
And then we did it at the Olympics. We did it overseas. We did it in makeshift newsrooms in like Barcelona. I mean, you know, we'd come back in and say, you know, Tony would say, Carl Lewis is the greatest Olympian ever. And I would say, shut up. That's stupid. You know, of course, it was Carl Lewis. It was the greatest Olympian ever. But we did this from sea to shining sea.
But the other ingredient that I feel like is so crucial to making this work is the fact that you both, you're willing to laugh at yourselves.
Well, you have to do that. You have to be self-effacing. You have to see the humor in your own life. You have to say, oh my God, did I say that? You know, if you don't, again, we are talking about trust. The people who watch you will never trust you if they think you don't know who you are. Mike knows that, and I know that.
Tom Jackson, boys and girls, we're taking a break. When we come back, Wilbon forces us to talk about Yao Ming, something he only does after Yao has a good game.
So, Mike, when you're doing PTI, how well can you predict what gets under Tony's skin?
Well, I could intentionally try to get under his skin. I don't have any, like, there's nothing in that for me to do that, unless it's in good humor. Usually it is. I can get under his skin with New York comments or I-95 comments, or I can do that. And I can predict it to about 100%. Not 100%, probably 90. But there's no point unless it's humor to move the conversation somewhere else.
So I'm
going to speak to the camera for you and for me.
What?
Not that long ago, that was the best division in football. They had Jimmy Johnson, Joe Gibbs,
Bill Parcells,
Buddy Ryan. Every year, the best division in football.
They stink. I-95. It's tough for you, isn't it? Tough
it's disheartening.
Day. I-95 disheartening. Stinks out the joint.
It's disheartening.
It makes me
it
happy.
Is.
You're describing a dynamic that can lead to arguments that are not entirely enjoyable.
Bad arguing should always be enjoyable, especially in sports. always. Arguing has only lately become nasty. And it's hot takes, and it's people who don't really know how to make their point because they don't really know what their point is. And so, yes, I'm blaming it on younger generations, two generations of younger people, often sports writers, who don't know how to make their point, who go to silly shit, who go to numbers only because they can't actually make the argument through narrative.
We've talked about offense for a couple of stories now. Now we have to listen to Wilbon about defense. In fact, more yards were gained in this game than any NFL game ever.
Pathetic.
Not just Super Bowls. Let me repeat this. Any game ever.
7-on-7.
Wilbon, you have been a defense first guy your whole professional life. Yeah. Of course, you'd have to be when you root for the pathetic Bears who have no offense. Did the lack of defense help or hurt this game yesterday?
Depends on whose perspective you're talking about. You ask me. Most people don't care about defense. Most people just want to put a foam finger on and drink and eat Doritos and watch those stupid, overrated, inflated commercials.
We'll get to all of that,
all the time.
For God's sake, can you follow this script?
I'm setting the scene.
Tony, as he says, I can say I'm wrong. I have no problem doing that. I think he's a pretty smart dude. I'm glad that we, like part of our show, people say, how is it you guys aren't mad at each other 10 minutes later? Because you admit you got to own what you do. People don't want to do that anymore.
Minnesota game was great. And I think that offense salvages this season. And yesterday was thrilling, yes.
Tony, the greatest teams of all time in the books, and I know you won't try to rewrite this, there are teams like the Steel Curtain.
That's
Pittsburgh
right, but they
teams,
had a lot of
the
offense.
The 85 Chicago Bears.
Yes, but they
These
had a lot of offense. What about Montana?
You.
What about his 40, Montana's 49ers?
They were
49ers?
Ranked number one in defense two or three of those times. Joe won. Yeah, there's no defense anymore. 7-on-7 skeleton drills, Tony.
Because you want a game that ends 16-13 and bores everybody to death.
I thought
it was absolutely thrilling, and I'm glad that I saw it.
I know you are. You're predictable.
You're and you're not?
Doritos. I'm not predictable because I'm not part of the 90%. I'm part of the 10% of discerning football viewers.
You're part of the 1% of millionaires is what you're part of.
Screaming, like we don't do a whole lot of screaming. Every once in a while we do some screaming. But I think everybody knows that at the end of the show, we're hugging. Everybody knows that. It's important.
And it's what makes all of that conflict, all of Mike's endless complaints about math and analytics and all of their exhortations to get off various lawns, it makes all of it actually enjoyable. Because they do something rare in television. They always, always walk out of the studio as friends. Their colleague Michelle Tafoya, who's now with NBC, saw it firsthand.
The reason it was more of a conversation than just a debate was that they actually listened to each other. And every once in a while, they'd win a point. And someone would go, all right, okay, I'll give you that. But, man, you just don't see that these days. And it makes me sad. Because I think the beauty of it was that these weren't two guys so stuck in their corners that neither one was going to budge. These were two guys in their corners discussing something, hashing it out, making fun of each other, laughing, and then maybe even winning the other one over on a point or two. And so there was this possibility of consensus. There was a possibility for, you know, seeing the light and agreement. And that's what a conversation is supposed to be about. Not just, hey, who can hit better and harder than the next guy? And I think that's just it. I hope they never lose that. I hope that never gets lost because it, in so many places, it just doesn't exist anymore.
So the question essentially is, what is the magic of the show? Okay, and the magic of the show is 11 words. Black guy, white guy, yell at each other, love each other. It's the relationship in a sports show that everybody wants. Everybody wants to be able to yell at his dear friend and then hug his dear friend after the yelling is done. That's the magic. That's what everybody wants.
So after the break, we consider an important and frankly existential question. What is actually worth yelling about?
Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code DAILY. That's code DAILY. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live.
So there are plenty of people who want sports media to be this closed universe. They only welcome the games themselves. They want them to be separate and apart from society and its issues. That's the whole refrain about stick to sports. But to any sort of journalist whose job is to observe reality, that kind of purity where sports can be free from politics, that's never existed. The whole concept is kind of like declaring that the ideal ocean would have no salt in it. Like, I guess you could wish for that, but to fellow journalists like Jim Miller, it made sense that PTI opened itself up to the way our world actually works.
The show never turned its back on important issues facing sports. It was not like, oh, they weren't going to deal with it or they weren't allowed to say what they felt. And this is, remember, ESPN went through an entire period where they wanted politics and social issues and whatever detached from sports. They were worried that the country was being so politicized and so divisive that if they started to hear individual opinions from their broadcasters, that would alienate viewers.
We begin today with NFL players' reaction to Donald Trump's remarks over the weekend, in which he called players who protested during the national anthem, quote, sons of bitches, unquote, and hoped an owner would fire them on the spot. Almost all teams showed solidarity in the face of this. Some players knelt, others joined hands or locked arms. Some teams stayed in the locker room, and even some owners spoke out against Trump's rhetoric. Wilbon, your thoughts on President Trump's remarks and how athletes, owners, and the league responded?
Tony, I guess athletes and owners, and particularly the NFL, since they were playing yesterday, this didn't touch many Major League Baseball situations, I guess they responded with unity. And they're all sort of praising themselves, and people are praising them justifiably for the way they handled this and came back at the president, particularly Robert Kraft, who I thought by talking about sports being the great unifier in this country and politics being divisive, the great divisive element in this country. It is amazing to me that I still live in a country and in 2017 that the president of the United States can attack like this. And what finally lifted me was seeing so many people say, no, we're not with you. Yeah. We are not with you. We're going to literally stand figuratively and literally with them.
Which is not to say that Tony and Mike arrive at their conclusions in the exact same way.
You and I may differ on this, because I think if you go all the way back in your ancestry, you'll find that your ancestors were brought here as slaves. Mine were not. Mine were very, very happy to come here because my people were thrown out of a lot of countries and denied entry into other countries. So I'm going to always stand for the anthem. I'm going to do that. And I hope everybody else does, too. But I recognize the right, more important than standing for a song, is the right that we have in this country, and maybe unlike any other country, to free speech and to assembly. And that does not make you a son of a bitch.
Of course, political speech, protest, is one thing. That's one category. But a few years before, in July 2013, there came a good example of another. Eagles wide receiver Riley Cooper got filmed yelling at a black security guard at a Kenny Chesney concert. Cooper said, quote, "I will jump that fence and fight every N-word here," kicking off a national controversy. And what PTI thought should happen next, what they would use their national platform to say, that mattered.
Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. We will get to A-Rod, Tiger, and Usain Bolt in a bit, but of course we begin today with Riley Cooper. The Eagles have fined Cooper and will provide him with mandatory sensitivity training. The league will do nothing. Roger Goodell said on ESPN Radio this morning, and I quote, "We do not penalize at the club level and league level for the same incident. We will not be taking action separately from the club," unquote. Wilbon, is this good enough for you?
Not nearly. Roger Goodell likes to use his bully pulpit for things that interest him. I guess somebody using the N-word, a white player using the N-word aggressively, talking about fighting those ends, okay? I guess that's not important for Roger Goodell, commissioner of the NFL. David Stern would never...
When they did go to these places that you're talking about right now, for instance, it had a lot more credibility. They had a lot more standing, and a lot of people paid more attention to it because, particularly with Michael, he was weighing in on something that was very important to him. We saw how important to him it was, and he was incredibly eloquent about it. So I think that was... You know, in many ways, one of their finest hours, because it wasn't hilarious. It wasn't like this great, you know, like almost like a blooper or something, a PTI. It was like really just smart, hardcore journalism analysis and a very, very sincere revelation of what he was thinking at the time.
But as the news cycle spun forward, it didn't take long for someone to propose the idea of the NFL outright banning the use of the word entirely across the whole sport. And that is a proposal and a power that Mike Wilbon specifically cannot abide to this day.
No commissioner should be enforcing whether somebody gets to call somebody the N-word. Commissioners, white ones, should shut up and listen. And that, I told Tony, you don't get a vote. I didn't mean that literally. I didn't mean he didn't get to feel a certain way about this. I know he's offended by it. I know I have called somebody that in Tony's presence, and he has literally withdrawn because it offended him. I love that about him. He didn't get to make that determination. He doesn't get that vote. I talk about this with friends and neighbors and colleagues. We have to navigate this. Not others. I don't walk into a synagogue and tell Jewish people what words they should use or what should offend them or what should... No.
For all his opinions and writing about the world at large, by the way, Tony does know when to play point guard and when to let Mike shoot. Their colleague at ESPN, Jackie McMullen, noticed that early on.
And Tony understood exactly how to let Mike Wilbon have the stage, but then add his own human touch to a very sensitive issue. And that's not easy to do, especially in that format. And I think it's probably the thing they've done most brilliantly throughout their careers.
And by now, decades into their careers, Tony and Mike have seen some things. Mike Wilbon is 62. The famously cynical Tony Kornheiser is 73. And they can both feel the world shifting. And after last year especially, they can also feel their dynamic shifting with it.
I'll tell you one that we're not heated over, but we are locked in disagreement over. I don't believe the world is in a better place post George Floyd as much as Tony wants to believe it. He wants to believe that. This is a very serious thing. He believes we bottomed out and we started to bounce back. And as bad as stuff is, and by the way, this is a perfectly legitimate case to make and millions of people make it. I don't. I don't think we're in a better place even that much.
I'm more optimistic. I'm more optimistic about the state of the culture and the state of the society, the state of the country. I'm more optimistic than he is, yeah. I believe people learn from mistakes. I believe they incorporate the learning, and I believe they go forward and they're better people.
And I believe that people are mean and stupid in a way, in a historical measure, like more so than ever. I always say to him, I hope you're right. I don't believe you're right. I hope you are.
But what Tony and Mike both believe, like an article of religious faith, is that whatever happens next cannot be allowed to blind us to what has already happened. Their mandate in their corner of mass media is not to stick to sports. They want the inverse. They want sports to stick.
We knew it better. I mean, I just watched Olympic coverage from all these networks. Nobody goes to the Olympics anymore. They don't know shit about the Olympics. They don't. They might be able to identify a picture of Carl Lewis. I mean, people who make a living in sports, they don't know the Olympics anymore. And by the way, that's not any of their faults individually. It's not the fault of producers. It's the culture. The culture is turned away from things, including history.
Yeah, I'm curious if you match him in intensity here. Is just the disappearing, the allegedly disappearing sense of history.
Yes, we are. He is louder about it and screams more about it. But I feel it just as strongly that people who are in, and the business we are in now is the sports television business. We're not writers anymore. We're in the sports television business. And it seems that people just sort of, they date everything of import from either the day they were born or the day they first learned to do this thing. And they don't study history. They may know a name or two, but they don't study history. They have no regard for the pioneering people in a variety of sports.
All of which is why Tony and Mike now find themselves acting as not just poodles, as Tony has long referred to everybody who does television, but as professors.
As many people as there are watching these finals, and it's a lot, pales in comparison to the number of people worldwide who care about the passing of Muhammad Ali. You saw a little more of his career than I did, Tone, but I know we agree that he was one of the two or three most impactful athletes of the 20th century. Tony, you and I did not talk about Ali's passing over the weekend, but I know he was front and center in your thoughts.
This is one of those days where it actually does pay to be old, because I saw Ali fight and I covered Ali. I was in his presence and he talked to me. And that's not a big deal, Mike, as you know, he talked to everybody. He didn't need the Players Tribune. He didn't need any publicists around him.
He was the Players Tribune.
There was no light too bright for Muhammad Ali. He courted it. He loved it. And as you say, we're all going to say a lot of things, but people need to realize what it meant to be heavyweight champion of the world at that period of time. There was no greater athlete in the world than the heavyweight champion of the world. There's no place on earth.
In fact, if you listen to how people exploit Ali's image today, trying to argue everything from protest to vaccine protocols, you realize how easy it is for people to forget entire decades at a time.
And Tony, to me, the journey from being the most reviled man in America to being probably the most beloved. And I know that journey took a long time. It took like 36 years from 1960 when he was an Olympian to 1996 when he carried that torch in Atlanta. But Tony, the other night, and I guess I reveled in his activism and his rebellion as much as the fights, but the fights are what made him and gave him the platform.
When I think about Ali, I am sort of amazed. I don't think he was the most reviled man in America, because there were kids like me who looked at Ali and Namath as countercultural heroes and liked everything they did. But if you took an accurate poll, a lot of people hated him. And they were not just white people and black people. They were scared when he went to the Fruit of Islam. They didn't know what this was about. And to have come in 20 or 30 or 40 years to be the most beloved person in the country, to have presidents call you in. It's like, how did that happen? Yeah. How?
You have to understand that there's an arc to all of this. And if you go to school and you study history, why would you not study history in your chosen profession in sports?
But as for the history of sports television, it's impossible to study that without realizing what PTI itself did to all of it and to all of us, for better and for worse. That's after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way, or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So, PTI is a show of contradictions as much as anything else. Maybe you've noticed that by now. It's a show that prays for the permanence of history while pioneering a remarkably disposable daily format. It's a show about writers who not only stopped writing, but inspired lots of other writers, myself very much included here, to mostly stop writing and attempt something, anything, like what Tony and Mike have been doing for 20 years. But what Tony is actually doing with Mike at any given moment is not terribly complicated.
I always want to make him laugh. If I make him laugh, somebody else is going to be laughing too. I want to make him laugh, and he will make me laugh. And these are honest laughs. And I don't think you see that on television all the time. Honest laughs. And I think we provided those.
Because PTI is not a debate tournament or a prediction contest. What Tony and Mike have provided more than anything is something human, as Jackie McMullen realized.
Okay, so you're a stranger descending from Mars, and you turn on your TV and PTI is on, and you're saying, what is the deal with these two? And then you start listening, and they're arguing, and you're like, oh, well, they don't like each other. And then you watch a little more, and they're like, oh, wait, maybe they do like each other. And then you watch some more and they're like, they're angry with each other. And then like, oh, they're laughing together. And then at the end of your show, you say, are those guys like best friends? Because that's pretty cool.
Just simply no substitute.
Again, journalist Jim Miller.
There is nothing better than having two smart, intelligent personalities together on a show, particularly two who, at the end of the day, the one thing we always realize at PTI is that even if they get cross with each other, even if it seems like they're really ticked off at each other, whatever, these guys love each other, they respect each other, and that feels good. And so as a result, you can let them run wild because they have such a benefit of the doubt on the part of the audience.
And to another former newspaper colleague, David Aldridge, sports actually felt kind of incidental.
When everybody realized that this was not a show about sports, and they may have not been able to articulate that, but they understood it at some level, that this is a show about these two guys, when you realize that these two guys really care about each other and they really love each other, you watch. You get it.
To have watched them talk over two decades can also be pretty eerie, though. I mean, you do TV long enough, and I guess the news cycle can just spin all the way back to the beginning sometimes. Like, let me just set the PTI time machine for 2002.
What's next?
Quick question, guys. I noticed that Jennifer Lopez is wearing a big diamond ring. Will Ben Affleck be her Mr. Right?
Is Ben Affleck her Mr. Right? All-knowing, all-seeing?
Her Mr. Right is whatever guy who's famous has juice at the moment. That's who her Mr. Right. This is the new Liz Taylor. In a lot of ways, she's beautiful like Liz Taylor was once the most beautiful woman in the world.
Ooh.
J-Lo, baby. Look at that.
Ooh.
And speaking of undying love affairs, let's also make a quick pit stop here in 2008, where Tony had a vision for the future.
Pardon the interruption, but I'm Mike Wilbon. Tony, one of my idols, Jerry Sloan, is celebrating his 20th year as coach of the Jazz tonight. You think we're going to be on the show for 20 years?
And Tony Kornheiser, I will be here. You, not so sure.
Oh, I see. So you're going to throw me under the bus for Levitard. Is
no,
that it?
No, not Levitard. No, heaven forbid.
Adonde.
No, not Adonde.
Rick Riley.
Oh, no.
Mariotti.
No, no.
The name that should not be spoken.
I'm going to do it alone.
No.
I think I can. I really do.
The show at this point is this Mobius strip of argumentation, looping around and around the sports universe. But pardon the interruption's executive producer, Eric Rideholm, somehow hasn't gotten dizzy. At least not yet.
The thing that has stood out for me the most on the show for the years is the show that happens behind the scenes, not the show that happens on the air. Because Tony and Mike are so happy to be with each other, and we're so happy to be with them, that when you go back to that first day when we started and Tony says, this thing isn't going to last 3 weeks, every time I'm in that room, I'm like, I want this to last forever. You know, like, it's lasted 20 years, which is insane, but I don't think anyone's tired of it.
Not even their prodigal protege, the hateable Dan Le Batard.
The eternal legacy of Tony and Mike as pioneers in this industry is they were the first to completely sell their souls for the television god.
Now, to be clear, an astute observer might observe that Dan made a remarkably similar cosmic transaction in his own life. But you know what? I mostly just want to keep workshopping these Hall of Fame plaques. So, Dan, take it away.
I blame, pardon the interruption, for every argument that's happening in this country right now. They gave us permission to scream at each other, to argue about the silliest of things, and you could yell and scream about it. I believe that they are responsible for ruining America's attention span. I believe that they are responsible for America not being able to consume one thing at a time without all sorts of graphics and noises. And I blame them for all of the arguments that are happening in America.
I assume people like it. And if people like it, they're not going to get rid of it until this thing airs, and then they'll get rid of it. But, you know, why does anything last? Because there's no need to replace it.
And in terms of PTI, putting a bow on that, it's, you know, it's the experience of your life you can never think is going to happen. You don't anticipate that. You don't wish it. You don't anticipate it. You don't even know that it's outside your ability to conjure. And so for the people who've been there the whole time, and there are quite a few, we are grateful. Tony and I are indebted. We are grateful. We have a debt we cannot repay. You know, it's defined the latter half of my professional life.
I think they're going to cancel us like 2 days after this thing runs. I think we're done. That's why I didn't want to do it. No. We're out. When they start throwing parties for you, you're done. You're out.
You think Tony's serious about retiring? You think he's serious talking about retirement?
He's serious talking about it. Is he going to do it? Most people think he won't. Now, I know Tony better than most of those people. I've never asked Carol what she thinks. And I've never asked Lizzie, and I've never asked Michael. Because I think some of those things belong within a family. And they can discuss them. Nobody else needs to know. I'm fine with, for somebody who does something so public, with privacy. But I don't know. I don't know when he'll walk away or if he can walk away. I would certainly like there to be a 25th. It's hard to... So 10 years from now, I'll be 72? No, there won't be a 30th, but I want there to be a 25th, and I wouldn't mind an odd number. Somebody wants to have a 27th. You know, but seriously, I did I see his 20th anniversary? Yeah, probably. Yeah. Yeah, I see what's on TV. I know what I think is good and what I don't think is good. Did I think we'd be on, once we got to 6 or 7 years, even before that. Yeah, I think that the discussion of sports is more important than ever.
Now, this is the part where I have to admit that I really cannot fathom what life after Tony and Mike might be like. And I really, really do not want to. And not just because they're fundamentally irreplaceable in every way, but also because my role as PTI's television grandson here, charting this family history of the show, having filled in on the show for years, it has all felt very real. Honestly, after all of it, and all of this talk about longevity and the show's mortality. I am now officially pretty uncomfortable with it. And I'm realizing as I talk to you now that I'm a lot more like Grandpa Tony in this way than I ever thought. But so many of us live underneath the shade of the tree that, pardon the interruption, planted and grew with the industry equivalent of 5,000 years of rain and the staff of visionary producers, family members who do more behind the scenes than we on-camera gas bags can ever possibly convey. And so, with all of that in mind, before we blow the candles out on this very special episode of ESPN Daily, there is just one more thing. Because I wouldn't be a good grandson if I didn't invite over this one last special guest.
So wait, these guys are getting a special on ESPN? For what? Yelling at each other for 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, pretty much.
All right, let's do this.
Welcome, President Barack Obama.
Tony and Mike, congratulations on 20 years of PTI. And Pablo, I hope you're proud of these guys for staying together so long. I know I am. Because 20 years is a long time. When PTI first came on the air, I was a state senator in Illinois. And whenever I had a little extra time, I would turn on ESPN. If I was lucky, there'd be a good basketball game on. If I wasn't, it would be you guys. But I will admit, you grew on me over the years. That's why I invited you to the Oval Office. Although I heard you didn't realize you were in the Oval Office until Rialli told you afterwards. Really? The Resolute desk didn't give it away? Or maybe the shape of the room? Once we got out on the golf course together, you seemed to relax a little. Mike was dropping names, as he always does. And Tony was talking about the local radio guy who delivered DC traffic updates on the ones. And meanwhile, my swing was starting to look pretty good, at least in comparison to your guys. So I became an official fan. Not just because I like watching you talk about sports, but because of the example you set. For two decades, you have shown us what it looks like to argue in a way that demonstrates mutual respect, even love. And you've also taught us that we have more in common than we realize. Let's face it, on the surface, you two don't exactly look like best friends. One of you stays up late. The other goes to sleep before the West Coast games even start. One of you jets around the country. The other has to be convinced to leave his attic. One of you roots for Chicago teams. The other roots for worse teams. But there's also a lot you do agree on, about sports and about life, about how we should treat each other. About right and wrong, about the importance of setting the bar high and working to exceed it. You expect that from athletes, and it's clear you hold yourselves to the same standard. Segment after segment, day after day, year after year, you guys show up. Well, at least most of the time you guys show up. And now I'm out of time. I'll try to do better next time. Congratulations on 20 great years. Knuckleheads.
God bless America. And good night, Canada. This podcast series was produced by Steve Martin, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troh, Julia Faust, and Christian Gardner. Special thanks to Julia Maldonado, Eric Rideholm, the entire PTI staff, the entire ESPN Daily staff, and additional production support by the whole team at E60. I'm Pablo Torre. This has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you next time.